This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. This is episode 235. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, whose site comes from SB Nation. And goodness, we have quite a bit to talk about. I mean, we're recording on a Tuesday night as we normally do, and again, it was a Thursday night game, but what we have is a whole bunch of stuff to deal with because the Cardinals are sort of in a bit of a mess right now, and they're the talk of the league because they were awful with the starters on Thursday. So we're going to talk about in this edition of the show, we're going to react to that preseason contest, so that 33-26 loss, but more importantly, it was a 26-0 deficit to start. There are some injuries. We're going to talk Robert Alford, his injury, what it means. Look at Hakeem Butler, who is also injured, what that means. And we're going to talk about, well, there are some players that are kind of coming back from injuries. Do we need to worry about the offense? Do we need to worry about the defense? And then we're going to look ahead to the team's third preseason game, which is the sort of mock game, and they're going to prepare a little bit like game-like. What do we want to see in that game? That's coming up in this edition of the show, Seth. Whew, that preseason game. That was a bad thing to watch at the beginning of the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was interesting to see how Oakland had taken a vastly different approach than what the Cardinals did in terms of kind of scheming things up. We continue to see absolutely nothing in terms of scheme or, you know, kind of any of the innovation, tempo, things of that nature that we've been told that this is what the Cardinals offense is going to be. So, I mean, I get the stress because it was really bad, but at the same time, I mean, they're basically running 6-7 plays, the same 6 or 7 plays that they ran the week before, and they're just leaving it at that. They're not concerning themselves with anything other than, you know, getting some looks, getting Kyler some reps against NFL speed and talent, and then kind of moving from there.
The one thing, you know, from the press box view, because there was a lot of discussion of just how bad things looked, and to someone watching the game, there was really no positive to be had from that when you look at the starters, both the offensive and defensive starters, because they fell behind 26-0. The starting defense let Derek Carr and then Mike Glennon basically pick them apart. The offense in 4 drives produced, 12 total yards. Kyler Murray was harassed. He misfired a couple times. There was the safety. There was really, it just looked at all levels bad. So as optimistic as everyone was and as excited as everyone was after the first preseason appearance of Kyler Murray, concerns creeped in that second one, which is kind of crazy to get to overreact to a second preseason game, but it plants seeds of doubt, because if we look at kind of going back to 2016, if we want to look at that 2016 Cardinals team and the way they approached the preseason and how the starters didn't look sharp, and then they came out and started the year flat. That is why you kind of worry about it. You see the offensive line basically not stopping. Kyler Murray's running for his life. Misfiring. There's no running game. There's penalties. There's clapgate. But, oh my gosh, there was about everything. And then the crazy thing is, as bad as everything was offensively and defensively, the thing that was talked about the most was the whole clapping thing and the false starts and that. What did you take away from that? I mean, of the whole clapping thing, because it's not like it's terribly new. Why was that such a big deal at the game? Why were they getting penalized for it?
I think there's a couple things. I think first you look at it, it's you know, the preseason, and we've seen before that you tend to see an overreaction. Was it last year or the year before where there was in preseason where it felt like every play they threw a pass interference call? I think it was 2 years ago. I think it was the last Arians year. But we were like, this is going to be unwatchable, right? Like everybody assumed it was just, I mean, it was so bad. And I remember the articles and talking about it, and then it really didn't matter come regular season. And so I think it's the same thing. I mean, you look at game one and there was no issues, and now in game two there is issues, and I'm sure John and John Gruden and Paul Gunther probably said before the game, hey, make sure you're watching this, or you know, Mark Davis sent something to the NFL before the game because they're the Raiders and they're kind of weird with that stuff, and so you know they made it an emphasis in the game, and you know it, you could tell it kind of like took the steam out of everything for the Cardinals. Like, what, we can't even get a snap off because you guys are basically changing the rules at this point on what has, you know, been acceptable. So now we got to go back. So, you know, it was what it was. It's unfortunate that this is, you know, that it happened, but it's good that it happened in preseason, and they can, you know, if they get one call early, they can kind of go to something else and be like, okay, this isn't the game, we can use this strategy.
Right. For me, the clapping thing was interesting because, Brett Hundley got called for one in the preseason opener, and people were like, wait, what? And from what it looks like, at least from my perspective and comments that they kind of made, the clapping's not an issue. I think where Kyler got himself into trouble, and Brett as well, is it wasn't the clapping. It was when they went to clap and didn't clap.
But the funny thing is, wasn't it Blandino that said, those shouldn't have been called?
Right. But the comments afterwards that Kingsbury said is, you know, there's got to be, got to get away with the abrupt thing. So I'm guessing that they will be fine as long as it's kind of like the foot stomping for like quarterbacks in the shotgun. They can't like lift the foot up and then not put it down or pretend to bring it up, as opposed to, okay, like Manny Wilkins for ASU. So this is my experience watching ASU. Manny Wilkins did the same thing. He clapped. And then when it looked like, but there was the first couple games when it was just, they snapped the ball on that first clap, and then defensive players started getting wise on it. And so what they started doing is snapping the ball on different claps. But he never fake clapped, where he'd like go to clap and then not. And I think that's what got them in trouble, even though necessarily it should be a penalty. I think that's that abrupt movement meant to kind of attempting to draw a team offsides, is as long as he doesn't stop his clap in the middle of it and actually not clap, I think they'll be okay. As long as it's okay, clap, clap, and then they snap the ball. Doesn't matter how many times they clap, as long as it's not, okay, I'm going to try and fool you in, oh, not clap.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that was just an unfortunate start to the game, and then kind of, you know, spiraled down from there. He missed, like you said, there's two throws he absolutely missed. I mean, there's no excuse. He just missed them, and that's, you know, if you want to be concerned about anything, that's what to be concerned about, is that he just missed a couple of throws, and they weren't easy throws by any means, but he missed them. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you know, that stunk. But in the same vein, you know, it's two throws. Like, he didn't get his normal 35 passes that he's going to get into a rhythm. And it was, you know, by that time, it was kind of, you could tell the body language from that first team was like, oh, we got to go out again type stuff. Whereas it may have been Cliff trying to make a point more than anything else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
hey,
the fact that they didn't get that many snaps. I mean, even with the four drives, it gave them 20 snaps. They got 20 snaps total.
Yeah.
And so, they needed it. They needed the reps because they'd only gotten 10 the week before, and he was trying to hit a particular number, I'm pretty sure. Although, I will say this. Aside from the big deficit, so the first team defense and the first team offense didn't look good. There was some – you had to like how the depth players played. How – in particular, one of the biggest takeaway was the fact that, you know, one of the weirdest moves the Cardinals made, that was signing Brett Hundley to be the backup quarterback. The fact that, oh, okay, I think we're okay at backup quarterback because Hundley seems to be thriving in this offense. He's got the athleticism. He showed off his legs. He's shown off some nice throws.
Isn't it kind of shocking, like, how good players can be when they're put in a system that they're like they can thrive in? It's weird, right? Like, hey, like, this is the best use of this player, and instead of trying to square peg round hole it, you get, I mean, the best examples, and I'm not comparing anybody in Arizona, but the best examples clearly Patrick Mahomes and, you know, in Kansas City. Like, Andy didn't try to make Mahomes a West Coast quarterback. He you know, installed portions of the air raid. He installed portions of, you know, the kind of college offenses, that the pretty boy offenses and all of, you know, that stuff. And now there are obvious air raid, or sorry, West Coast aspects to it. However, in the end, you know, he made it about Patrick and not about Andy Reid's scheme. And that's kind of Cliff. They got a guy in Brett that Brett Hundley's strengths have always been kind of playing in that wide open spread air raid type offense. And now you're seeing, you know, a guy that some thought when he was at UCLA that he could have been a you know, day one or early day two pick, and it just never manufactured. And now you're seeing, and obviously it's the preseason, but you're seeing a little bit more of what he can do and how talented he is.
Well, if you look at it, think about this, because we look at the previous years of, well, Sam Bradford, how he looked, Josh Rosen, how he looked, and even before that when it was Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert. And while Stanton was well-established, he didn't look good that last preseason, except until the preseason, the last time he got some extended work. But Hundley, I mean, it's sort of where there were concerns, or there was the thought that, well, if another quarterback comes available, people, like media people at the draft, is saying, well, are you comfortable where you're at with your quarterback room? And the fact that Brett Hundley has now shown that, okay, so if he has to play, maybe it isn't going to be a mitigated disaster like last year. So there's some thought about that. There were some players that I liked what they did. It was interesting to see Joshua Miles, their seventh round pick, one of their seventh round picks, getting second team snaps at left tackle. Trent Sherfield again showed up. You saw another couple of frames from Chris Jones. You saw a bounce back game and away from DJ Foster. And so there were things alike in the fact it was really exciting. Even though it was garbage time, the effort with which Drew Anderson led that final scoring drive was fun to watch. It was fun to watch. I know Oakland was barely playing defense at that point, but the intensity, the fun that he was playing with, and then to actually go down and score that touchdown late was impressive.
Well, even go back a series or two, I can't remember exactly when, but, you know, Knopf to Andy Isabella. I mean, you saw flashes from everywhere except the first team.
And that was good. It was good.
Right, and that's like that's the good and the bad of the preseason. But on the flip side, you have teams that are established that still haven't even really brought in their first team guys, right? Like, they're still not using them in any way. And so for that, I think it's, you know, of course we wanted to see Kyler come out and go, you know, 7 for 8 for 115 yards and a touchdown. But in the same time, it, you know, I'll worry about it after week 1 or week 2 or week 3. Like, I probably won't even worry about it till week 3, if I'm being completely honest. Like, unless the Cardinals are getting just absolutely bludgeoned in the first two games, it's not a concern to me until week 3 of the regular season.
And a comment that kind of Peter King made in one of his columns about how this offense that people are paying for, it's not even a real dress rehearsal. It's a fake dress rehearsal, a faux dress rehearsal offensively. And, you know, say what you will of this offense being vanilla, that Peter King makes it sound like that the Cardinals are actively doing things that they won't do in the regular season. I do have a response to that. That idea is almost ludicrous. Yes, they are doing things, and I will say this, from the times I was in training camp, and if you want to look at how they've run the offense in the first two preseason games, the looks that they gave in the preseason, guess what? They match a lot of the things they did in practice, because you can't do it any other way. Those are things that are in there. So they do have two tight end sets. They have three tight end sets. We saw 2 and 3 tight end sets in training camp. Now, here's the thing. Just because they're in the offense, that doesn't, so they might have been running things that they won't use often, but those are definitely things that are going to be in this. NFL offenses are complex enough that they're not going to ask their players to learn one offense for the preseason that's not real, and then learn a completely new offense in the regular season. There are wrinkles that they add. The formations might not be as common, but these are things that are actually in the playbook. What they ran in those first two preseason games are, in fact, part of the offense. They're just a small part of the offense, perhaps a more obscure thing. But that's not to say they're never going to run three tight ends, because every team runs that.
They're also extremely basic.
Oh, yes.
In the sense of, they're basic in the sense of they did nothing in terms of shifts, in terms of, you know, movement on the offense and all of that. So for that, you know, you look at it and you go, yeah, this is something we'll see. But there's outside of the first play, the RPO where he got 4 or 5 yards and probably could have gotten more. I mean, that's the other thing. He is so fast. He probably could have gotten a little more. It was, you know, it's just very vanilla type stuff where it's maybe goal line stuff. It's maybe 3rd and short, 4th and short stuff that they're running. And then you saw some, you know, basic offensive concepts in the same way. So, you know, those are kind of what you saw, and you'll see them sprinkled in, but they're not going to be the, you know, basis of the offense that the Cardinals run on September 8th or whatever day the first game is.
Anything else of note that you'd like to react to the game from Thursday?
I think you did you kind of hit on it with the Joshua Miles. I think, you know, you and I talked about Reese, whatever his name is.
Odhiambo.
Yeah, and how bad he was the first week.
And he looked bad at guard on the third team. Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, I doubt he's going to be on this roster, you know, after cuts. I also think that the most unfortunate thing that happened before the game and was kind of shoved off, and then we got the unfortunate news after the game on Robert Alford, and that, you know, that was, to me, that was the biggest thing from the game outside of the whole clap gate that these people wanted to, you know, get all over. Was, man, it seems like the Cardinals can never buy a healthy training camp, can they?
They can. And coming up next to the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about that. What happens now with after Robert Alford's injury? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And it was kind of shocking. Now, I don't know what the reporters actually knew, because the injury happened during a closed part of practice. Robert Alford suffered a leg injury in practice outside on Tuesday. And then on Thursday, it comes out that he is not there. Kent Summers, for one, it must be serious. We didn't know what it was exactly. And then the news was reported by Ian Rappaport, and Cliff Kingsbury himself said it after the game. Well, he suffered a lower leg injury. It's significant. He's going to miss a significant part of the season. Turns out that it's a fracture. Ian Rappaport says it might be injured reserve. And Patrick Peterson even suggests now, more recently, hopefully we get him back. The leg breaks are a little bit tricky. So Robert Alford out at least half the season. We don't know exactly. I can't imagine that they will carry him on the roster, so IR probably makes the most sense. Patrick Peterson is out for the first six games with the suspension, so guess what? Now Tremaine Brock is at least the week one number one corner, and then they're going to rely on Byron Murphy, who is, honestly, he should be capable of doing that because based on how highly they had him rated. And now Chris Jones now enters the picture. So you go from having a Patrick Peterson, Robert Alford, Byron Murphy trio to Alford, Brock, Murphy, to now Brock, Murphy, and Jones or someone else or Brandon Williams or something. And Tremaine Brock is a serviceable guy, but if he's your number one corner, this is scary stuff.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you go back and you kind of look at it, and it was something that we talked about when they signed Robert Alford, and that was, you know, the biggest concern with Alford is, you know, what does he have left in those injuries? And this is a different injury. This is that you just unfortunately can't predict. You can't look at this and go, oh, you know, he's going to have another lower leg injury. And so, but at the same time, this is the reason that, at least from what I've heard, that the Cardinals were the only team that were willing to give him basically two full paid years. Two guaranteed years in his contract when you work out the money type stuff. And that is, you know, why they were able to sign him, maybe over some contenders that were looking for a cornerback. And so that is the unfortunate risk you take when you bring in a guy that's on the wrong side of 30 that's dealt with injuries. And so, I mean, the thing that sucks the most is that this was a team that finally made a concerted effort in the secondary, and it still doesn't matter. Like, that's what sucks. I mean, it's just like the offensive line. Like, say what you want about Steve Keim, and you know, there are few people that have been as critical of what Keim has done as I am. However, he has put a lot of money towards the offensive line, and for the first time maybe ever, he put a lot of money and, you know, equity into the cornerback position, and it's just one of those unfortunate things that it didn't show up. It's not going to show up this year. And so even though he made it a top priority, even though he made it something that he wanted to fix, it still looks like, oh, you know, well, you know, Keim doesn't care and they have no help and this and that. And I mean, it sucks because this was, I think, the first year where he made that concerted effort to really address for more than a season the secondary, not including Patrick Peterson.
So what does this mean for the roster now? So obviously we now have got three guys who are going to contribute, unless there's it. But what happens now? Do they keep four? Do they keep five corners? And who's going to be that fourth guy? Because now you've got on the roster the guys that are battling for that fourth spot. You've got Dietrich Nichols, second-year player, showed a little promise last year. But again, he didn't look great in that second preseason game. Gave up a bomb of a touchdown. Then you've got Nate Brooks, an undrafted rookie out of North Texas. I mean, there's a little potential there, but doesn't have kind of the testing numbers you might want. And then we come back to Brandon Williams, who just came off of PUP. He apparently had back surgery, which was – that's one of those things is like these a lot of these offseason injuries, we don't know how serious they were. Apparently, it was pretty bad. We never knew of any sort of injury to Brandon Williams before. Now he's coming off of back surgery. But the super athletic former non-cornerback who they say does good things on special teams but seems to always make mental mistakes, he's right back in the mix, isn't he?
Yeah, and I mean, he's the – cat, you know, the nine lives, and like I think this is his ninth life, basically. Like, he's gonna get the shot. You know, so is Nate Brooks and Dietrich Nichols, but like you said, they've already kind of proven that they're fringe NFL guys. And so if you're talking fourth corners, a lot of times fourth corners are fringe NFL guys on bad teams. And so you know what I'm saying? Like, so when Chris Jones is your fourth corner, you're like, oh, that's not bad. You know, good story. You look at your top three and you go, oh, you know, the Tremaine Brock could be stronger. And then Chris Jones maybe gets waived in week six or after week six. And you've got, and then your fourth corner is Tremaine Brock. And you're like, huh, you know what? That's a good secondary. Now all of a sudden you're saying your number three corner is Chris Jones and, your number three corner is Chris Jones and your number four corner is Brandon Williams or Dietrich Nichols or that's kind of where the unfortunate thing happens is that they either are going to play the waiver wire or you're going to look at this secondary and go, whew, hopefully the pass rush can find a way to get things done.
Right.
But you go back – you go back a little bit to the Miami Dolphins that year with under Joseph as the DC, right? And their secondary was not – it wasn't exactly what the, even what it has now with who's the kid that's the stud there? I can't even remember his name now.
Xavien Howard.
Yeah, Xavien Howard. So, like, the year with – was that 16 or was that 17?
It was 16 when he was there.
16, yeah. You know, it wasn't – they got by on a lot of talent rushing the passer. You know, so I'm not saying that group wasn't better than this group in terms of just secondary talent, because I truly think it was, at least from, you know, the start of it. But at the same time, you know, they were starting Tony Lippett and Byron Maxwell. I mean, I'm not joking, like that, those were their starters. And, you know, so you look at it, Vance Joseph has done more with less. It's definitely not fair to expect him to be able to do something similar. And I think that's kind of why he got that promotion he got, you know, or why he was able to get that job for the Denver Broncos, is because you look at what their expectations when you look at their, you know, points against and their yards against and stuff like that. And he really did a nice job of kind of piecemealing together a team that could compete. I mean, the top three corners on that team were Tony Lippett, Byron Maxwell and Bobby McCain, and I think only one is still in the league. So, like, again, it's not like we're talking about the 14 Seahawks secondary. You know, I mean, he's done more, you know, with less, and it's just, you look at it, it's not ideal by any means, but again, he's had this happen before, so, you know, we'll see what happens.
So, do you think the Cardinals should look at some of the guys out there? Now, which makes, if we look at it now, David Amerson would sure be nice right about now, but I'm going to hold to this. I don't know what happened, but for the way he was released in the middle of the spring, seems weird. There had to have been something going on behind the scenes, because you'd think that he'd be a guy they'd bring back. Or you look at some of the guys out there, you've got Sam Shields. He's been a number one corner before. He played in a Wade Phillips defense, which is very similar to Vance Joseph defense. Leon Hall, the Cardinals had interest in him 3 years ago, but he was coached by Vance Joseph. Is any of those guys on the street even worth a look? I mean, you could go with Brent Grimes, but then you also bring in the mess of what is his significant other on Twitter.
Yeah.
And he's old. He's, what is he, 36 now? So
yeah. I mean, I don't think they're going to bring in anybody that's a free agent now. I think what they'll do is they'll probably use that first waiver wire and pick up a guy, and that'll kind of be where it goes. Because, I mean, just in the end, what are you going to do? Like you said, you're going to pick up Leon Hall, who can't move anymore. You're going to pick up, you know, Brent Grimes, who's really a slot guy at this point. It's still a talented slot guy, but a slot guy nonetheless. And so now it's what we talked about with Murphy before the Alfred injury. Like, are you really going to want to move him to move him back? So I think you're going to end up seeing this team stick with kind of what they have, and then they'll bring in somebody. They'll bring in somebody once the waivers start to pile up. Cause I am not going to be shocked if they don't bring in maybe 5 to 6 guys off the waiver wire, like between the defensive line, the linebackers, and the corner position.
Well, the offensive line too. They need a backup tackle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and so that's my point. So you could literally see 5 or 6 guys.
Coming up on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about another injury that we learned about on Tuesday. That would be Hakeem Butler. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're going to talk about now Hakeem Butler, 4th-round pick. Guys, a guy that many people are super excited about, has not looked as good as people wanted him to be so far. However, Hakeem Butler, he has a hand fracture, an avulsion fracture, which means he's going to miss significant time, maybe injured reserve. How does this change the outlook of that receiver room in your mind?
It doesn't. You and I talked about this last week. Like, the only thing this does is open a roster spot. So basically, we talked about it. Butler was like, really, their 6th guy, you know. So we talked about Fitz and Kirk, and then you've got Keyshawn Johnson and Trent Sherfield, and then you have, you know, Andy Isabella. So really, that's your 5, and then your 6 was, I mean, probably Demir Byrd, wouldn't you say?
I mean, I do. Demir Byrd's been getting those first team reps, and I keep thinking that it's probably a roster spot was going to come down to Byrd or Pharaoh Cooper because of their skill sets.
Yeah, and so now maybe you just keep both. So, I don't know. Maybe you don't, or maybe you keep Kevin White and he gets those Hakeem Butler vertical route, you know, 10 times a game treatment. Maybe that's the one thing you do with this, right, is that you can keep Kevin White and he can play the Hakeem Butler 2019 role, because that's what you and I had talked about, is like Butler was likely not going to play very much.
As much as people thought he was going to be a super impact player, he might be a decent pickup, like, for fantasy, because he would have big plays. But he was going to be, for me, he was going to be always super high variance.
Yeah, and so you know, you look at it now, like I said, you can keep a Kevin White in that role if you want to continue the same way, or maybe you keep a more special teams impact guy in Bird or Cooper, or you can keep both, or maybe it allows you to keep an extra corner, right? We just talked about the position. Maybe now you can keep six wide receivers only, and you can keep an extra corner and keep five of those guys, because you're looking and going, ugh, do I like only having four guys and three of them being Tremaine Brock, Chris Jones, and just, you know, pick a name, Brandon Williams, out of a hat? Like, do I really want, like, so maybe we need to add a fifth guy. So yeah, I think that's the way it changes things, is that it doesn't force the Cardinals to have to, and they were going to keep Hakeem Butler.
Yeah.
Right.
And to me, it felt like he was going to be that seventh receiver that they kept. If they were going to keep seventh receiver, it was so that they could hold on to Butler so that they could develop him. And that's kind of the thing that they talked about, that Cliff Kingsbury talked about today, which is the really unfortunate thing, because if there's one thing that Butler needed was that development, he needs to reps in practice. He needs to develop more to his game to become a big time, potentially a big time receiver, because he's got that size, speed, playmaking combination. But if he ends up on injured reserve, which is, it probably is probably going to go that direction, he can't even practice. So he loses 20, unless they reactivate him, unless they bring him back after midseason some point, because you can do that with two players. And if Robert Alford's one, then you're already going to do Hakeem Butler. That you don't know who else is going to get injured at that point. And so if he doesn't come back, well, then 2019 was wasted, and he goes back in the offseason next year and he hasn't made any progress. And so you're banking on him to then make huge strides in the second offseason without having gotten any game reps or practice reps during the previous year. And you know, we've seen things happen before. This could potentially derail his NFL career.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing, is like we said, it probably helps the Cardinals from a straight roster building standpoint in 2019, but it could really hinder the development of Butler, because even if he can come back in, let's say, best case scenario, 6 weeks, which is, I mean, the best case scenario I've seen is 3 weeks, but they didn't sound like that's what the team thought was going to happen. So let's say it's, you know, the more serious best case scenario, which is 6 weeks. So you look at it from that perspective and you go, okay, 6 weeks puts them at, you know, week four. Can they keep him on the roster and active during that time? Probably not. So then you're talking about putting him on IR with the, you know, you don't have to designate him to return at this point. They changed the rules, but you know, then he's got to be on the IR for 8 weeks still. So, yeah, so then that's really 10 weeks, and, you know, it all becomes the game do you play. And again, can you afford to have Hakeem Butler be the, let's hope, second guy after Robert Alford? And so that's what the question becomes with all of this, is can, you know, do you want to give up on the season now for Hakeem Butler, or do you want to wait and see where you're at in week eight before you make that decision?
And obviously this changes things. So it opens the door potentially for a guy like Kevin White, who looked like probably done. It even creaks open that door a little bit, cracks it open a little bit for Chad Williams, for that possibility. If you're thinking six receivers, you're probably going to go, I mean, we know it's going to be Fitz, it's going to be Kirk, it's going to be Andy Isabella, Keyshawn Johnson, and at this point I think Trent Sherfield is a lock. So you've got five locks for the roster. So that sixth spot, if they only keep six, which was, well, That's why we thought they were going to keep seven, because Butler was pretty much a lock as well. So now you've got, if you keep, there's one spot left. Is it going to be Pharaoh Cooper? Is it going to be Kevin White? Is it going to be Demir Bird? All have, you know, kind of their pluses, their positives and negatives. Cooper has that return game potential, but they do have other guys who can return kicks. Demir Bird is incredibly fast. He's had some moments in camp, and he also can return. And then you've got Kevin White, which gives you other things, but he doesn't give you anything in special teams, potentially.
Right, and so I think the sixth has got to be at this point, if they do only six, it's got to be Cooper or Bird because of the special teams capabilities. And then you look at it and you say, well, Bird's, at least right now, been the better receiver in preseason, although he did have the face, the facial in the game. So, you know, you lean towards Bird because, as you said, they have so many other – I mean, TJ Logan, Andy Isabella's returned some kicks. You know, like you said, Bird can return kicks. Obviously, Christian Kirk, but that doesn't sound like that's something they want to do this year. So you kind of look at all those things and you say, you know, they can probably keep six now. And then, like I said, you add to the defensive side of the ball. Maybe you carry an extra lineman. The other thing was this. This was big for Hakeem Butler because he was unlikely to be active on Sundays anyways. Because, as you said, he wasn't contributing on special teams. So if he wasn't active on Sundays, you know, he was kind of that, if they were going to keep seven wide receivers and then he was inactive every week or inactive for the first, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. Now you could possibly get a guy that gives you – that is able to be active on game day and, like I said, make an impact in the game in some way.
Cut out next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. We're going to keep talking about injuries. Only these are guys that are on their way back from injuries. Let's talk about them on the next segment of the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. There's some other players out with injuries that are coming back. Justin Pugh practiced on Tuesday for the first time in a few weeks. It's uncertain whether he's going to play or not on Saturday. Hassan Reddick is making his way back. Charles Clay has returned to practice. I don't know what his status for the game is, but number one, how badly do the Cardinals need all three of these players back? Justin Pugh, Hassan Reddick, and Charles Clay. How badly do the Cardinals need these guys?
Oh, they need all of these guys. I mean, the offensive line's been really bad. Mason Cole had a little nick, was a little nicked up. He's not played well at left guard. Humphreys hasn't played well at left tackle. A.Q. Shipley hasn't played well at center. So maybe getting Pugh back there is kind of the remedy to all of this. Charles Clay, I mean, I don't know how much the tight ends matter right now because they haven't really been involved in the offense because, as we talked about at the beginning, they're kind of being very deliberate and vanilla. I mean, Ricky Seals-Jones has been really the only guy that could get playing time that's even, you know, been really involved.
I will say, though, that they have had tight ends on almost every play.
Right.
So Max Williams got extensive playing time. The tight ends are playing, but they're just not
involved in the passing game.
Right. Yeah. Until Caleb Wilson in garbage time.
And who's the big guy that Daniel? Is it Daniel? The last
Daniels,
name?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's gotten some play, you know, some routes. But, you know, so I don't think Clay necessarily matters in the preseason. I think it's obviously going to be – I think his role will be more impactful in the regular season when they're running their offense. So, I mean, when you look at it, it's important – to an extent, but I think Pugh's really the guy that matters. I mean, Hassan Reddick, obviously, but we're not sure when he's going to be available at this point. I mean, you and I were talking about it. Like, how many knee procedures can you have done Well, it was a knee procedure, wasn't it?
It was, yes. It was. Yeah, it was to clean up the meniscus. So,
yeah, like some scarring or tissue stuff, and like how I don't know. Like, is it fair to expect a guy to be back in 4 weeks and performing at a high level? Like, I don't know.
Well,
so
Dan Buchanan last year, he came back and looked bad.
Slow.
He looked bad. I mean, he looked in that first week.
Incredibly slow, and like he had no explosiveness, and you know, kind of set a bad precedent for the year for him. So you look at it, Pugh's the guy right now. They need him back. They need to see something positive from the offensive line, and then kind of, you know, kind of end on that note, from that perspective. Because like I said, Clay's position and what he's going to be asked to do is going to be so much dependent on the tempo of the offense and creating mismatches, that, and they're not trying to do that right now, so it doesn't really, I mean, in the preseason it's not really going to matter.
For me, the one concern I have, and that is, if Pugh doesn't make it this week, he doesn't play in the preseason. That's, even though he's played a while in the league, I always get a little concerned when a player is unable to play, especially the big guys. The big guys, their bodies need to, now granted, Pugh keeps getting hurt, but he's a guy I think whose body needs to prepare for this season by playing. And if he doesn't play this week, he's not going to play in the fourth preseason game. Hassan Reddick is another concern for me as well, because, you know, he's a guy that needs the reps.
He needs reps. That's the crappy part about that is, you know, we've talked about it. It's year three. It's system three. It's coach three. It's defensive coordinator three. It's position five.
Sort of, yeah. It's kind of like what he started, but obviously it's a little bit different than Betcher. So he went from inside to outside. He started it at inside 3-4, then he went to edge, so basically a pass rushing role. Then he went to another space, but it was a 4-3 outside, so it's not totally different. And now he's back as a 3-4 inside, so technically it's a bit different verbiage, different, and this is all when he was new to the positions anyway. So
yeah, exactly.
And the truth is, after what we saw from Jordan Hicks, briefly, when they got roasted, he got beat really badly by that running back play. Reddick's athleticism is going to be needed on that field, so hopefully he can come back soon and that he looks at least athletically what he was.
Yeah, and that's going to be big for them, because they need that athleticism on the second level, and guys that can come downhill and make plays. Because, you know, say what you want about run-stopping linebackers, but Dennis Gardeck is definitely not wowed in his opportunity. And so you look at him and you say there's a reason he was an undrafted guy. I mean, he's a decent rotational linebacker, very good special teams guy. He's not – at least so far, he has not looked like a starting caliber linebacker on a down basis in the NFL.
Kind of next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, we're going to come back and talk some more. But now, should we worry about that offense? Should we worry about that defense? That's kind of next on Rise of C-Red. Back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So ultimately, what do we need to worry about? Do we need to worry about the offense? Do we need to worry about the defense? Which is the greater concern for you right now?
I think it's the defense, and that's just because they're getting beat man-to-man. You know, you and I have talked about it a little bit. The Cardinals aren't scheming right now, and so when you look at how bad the offense has played at times, you have to take it with this grain of salt that, okay, well, they've looked bad, but they haven't really done anything on purpose. Like they're just taking their time and getting things, you know, like I said earlier, working on timing and things like that. There's no tempo involved in the offense. There's nothing that is setting this. I mean, there's nothing that sets this offense apart from any offense in the NFL at this point. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I'm not worried about the offense because I can't worry about the offense that hasn't been on the field yet. Defensively, they just – I mean, you talked about Jordan Hicks a little bit. Like, he looked slow. They look like they have no teeth up front right now for whatever reason. I think a lot of it is – and I'm not saying this questioning their effort level, but there's definitely a disinterest from Chandler Jones and Terrell Suggs right now. I don't know if you gathered that as well, but it just seems like they're out there because they have to be. And, you know, these guys have played more football than probably most, you know, pass rushing groups that have ever stepped on the field together. So I don't want to say that they're not providing the effort, but I don't think they're going to be as bad as they've been early. So, you know, it's still a concern, especially when you start to pile up the injuries and then, you know, the suspension. You're talking about you're down your top two corners and you're down a starter, you know, at linebacker right now. The offense, for the most part, knock on wood, is intact, and they're just not showing anything.
That's for me, for more than anything, the defense is concerned to me. Well, one, because one, they haven't looked good. And I actually, now that you mention it, I hadn't noticed the lack of anything Chandler Jones and Terrell Suggs, but I'm sure they are executing specific things. They're not trying to show off any particular moves. They're just trying to get through their snaps. Now, I have concern about the defense because they're so thin at corner, because they're missing a starter at linebacker, and because, well, the defensive line, even if Zach Allen is good, you're still looking at Terrell McLean as your top depth guy, and then you're counting on a seventh-round pick in Michael Dogby to be more than capable. Well, and I will say, I've been on the record of saying I think Michael Dogby will be a very nice addition to this team and will probably be a nice contributor. But if you're entering, if you're going to have six defensive linemen on your team and half of them are rookies, that's not a good look, because is the other guy that they bring in, is it going to be Miles Brown? Are they, because like, they've tried to sign two defensive linemen, they've flat out just not taken the deal. Corey Legit, Clinton McDonald, they haven't signed. They turned down the offer that the Cardinals had for whatever reason. Either they're wanting more, or this the Cardinals are not offering much is the case. So obviously for me, the defense is the greater concern, because on offense, we know they're not showing everything. And the other thing, Cliff Kingsbury's offenses have been great everywhere. It would be very odd to me to see them be bad in the NFL, considering the type of offensive mind he is. It would seem counterintuitive to see that if the one thing that he's done great at the college level, and that's produce prolific offenses, when his worst offense averaged 30 points a game, and over the course of 9 years, his teams have averaged 35 to 37 points a game with 500 yards of offense a game. So it would be they would be failing extraordinarily if he cannot come into the NFL and have okay success. I mean, we said all offseason, this offense doesn't have to go from worst to first. If they become a capable mid-tier offense, this team is incredibly better than it was last year.
Yeah, and I wrote about it today. I sent you the article, and you just looked at it before we started the show. You talk about that offense, and the offense last year was historically awful. They were one of the three worst offenses since 1996. In the NFL, like in NFL history. So since Football Outsiders has done their thing, so 33 seasons, the Cardinals offense was one of the three worst they've ever seen. One included an expansion franchise, the Houston Texans in 2002. And then the other one was the 1992 Seattle Seahawks.
I don't remember. I can't tell you anything about
anything.
That.
No, and so.
And it was 1992. That was back in the era where we saw. I remember the games. It was like the 6-3 games because the defenses were so good.
Right. And so you look at it. And so if they were to improve to average, it would be a historical jump in their offensive ability. So, again, less than optimal to see the start for the offense, but I think they're going to be okay.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast for our last segment of the show, we're going to talk about the third preseason game. What do we want to see in this dress rehearsal for the game? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Cardinals go to Minnesota this weekend. What do we want to see? We're going to see the starters playing for roughly a half. Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray have said that the offense is going to look more like the offense. They are preparing this week like it is an actual real game. This is their mock game week, so they are now running a game week schedule. Does that mean everything should be fixed this week?
No, I don't think so. I think you're still going to see quite a bit of conservative vanilla play calling. I think you're going to see quite a bit of like you said, like formations they'll use, but not looking at the shifts, not looking at the, you know, kind of playing that cat and mouse game. And I think that's the biggest thing that people are missing is that they're not changing anything based on what the defense is doing. They're just calling their set of plays that they're going to run and then moving forward. And so to me, that is kind of what sets this apart from the adapting to what the defense is showing you type stuff. Obviously, we're very hopeful that it's a better game and you see more from this team. But I'm not holding my breath. I don't expect it to be as bad as last week. But I don't expect it to be anything in the realm of what we expect. I mean, I don't expect to see 3 touchdowns from the starters.
can we get a touchdown?
That would be great. Like, trust me, I would be incredibly happy to see something like that. But I'm not going to hold my breath. I'm not going to say, if they don't get a touchdown, this is a complete failure of a, like, it is what it is.
So, yeah, I want to see a touchdown from the offense. I want to see the defense stop someone one.
That would be nice.
That would be good. They don't have to do a 3-out. They don't have to dominate. I just want them to get off the field, or in the case of at least this, force a third down. Force a third down. In the first 2 drives, I think they had 2 third downs, maybe. They were just moving down the field. And then after that, obviously, preseason still is about individual players. So we want to see, frankly, I want to see Justin Pugh on the field. I want him to get on the field and play. Obviously, he needs to be healthy. I want to see Charles Clay on the field. I want to see him move around a little bit to see if hopefully he's not washed up. But then after that, it's about the individuals for the depth. Who steps up? Can Joshua Miles build on his last game because he had a pretty solid game? Is he going to be able to secure the backup? That would just say a lot if they use a 7th-round rookie as their backup tackle. Will Corey Cunningham bounce back? Will we see anything from the DJ Foster, Wes Hills group? Will Kevin White, who should play, will he flash? Because unless he's with the starters, but if he's playing against the backups, he should flash. I want to see that. And then I want to see – I just want to see – I want to see individual players. I want to see what happens with the linebackers. I want to see what the defensive line guys can – can Michael Dogby continue to make a push? Can Pete Robertson still do that? Like, they're all individual players that I want to see doing things.
Yeah, and you want to see the offensive line look competent. Like they've taken three steps in the same direction together at any point. You would like to see the defense create some type of pressure. You know, maybe Jordan Hicks tackle somebody. I mean, he did a nice job on the run and the strip against the Chargers, but you know, he got outrun pretty bad by, I can't even remember the guy's name, against the Raiders. So, you know, it all comes down to just really creating and seeing growth week to week. And they took what, you know, is undoubtedly a step back in the second game and what was a much more prepared Oakland Raiders team. And so now you'd like to just kind of see them take two steps forward. So they've taken three steps forward all preseason and kind of end on a strong note. Because like you said, they're not going to play. These guys aren't going to play in the fourth preseason game.
Right. Because the fourth preseason game against the Broncos next week, what it's going to be, we're going to see. It's going to be the Drew Anderson, Chad Kanoff, Wes Hills, DJ Foster combo with
Dante Strickland. Yeah.
With, you know, at linebacker Tanner Vallejo, Joe Walker, Zeke Turner group. So, yeah, we want to see something to be. I mean, I don't want. I mean, at this point, like we've said over the offseason, the Cardinals not only need to make the moves that they need to done, that they can't just hide everything because they were so bad last year. They need to give the fans a little bit of hope. Kyler gave them hope the first week. Last week took away all that hope. They need to give them a little bit of excitement to why fans should be excited for this year, other than, hey, we're going to watch Kyler Murray and hopefully he doesn't die.
Yeah, exactly. You want to be excited about this team and this group going into the season, and that, you know, nobody's expecting a playoff run, but you want to expect at least excitement and to see this team compete week in and week out.
And with that, we'll wrap up this edition, episode 235 of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. By the time you hear this, it'll probably be Wednesday or Thursday. But we will be back in a week. We'll be able to react to it, so it won't feel like it's been nearly a week. So it'll only be a couple of days. So we'll have a game to react to. We can talk about what we're looking for in the final preseason game, and hopefully there are some roster moves or some veterans or not injuries. So we'll be back again next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find us everywhere. Go Cardinals and Rise Up Sea Red. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.